Ramsey TV.
I'm going to quit apologizing for exposing this teaching. It is appalling. And I have heard from you, some of your comments, that you know friends who have bought into this complicated lie. Can you imagine some young people happen upon this teaching and they hear that, oh, I can't really be spiritual unless I marry and have kids. And so this would force a young person to possibly do something that it is not in them to do, that they don't want to do. And in fact, the opposite is true, that you are better off being single. If you can be single, do it. Because then you will be undistracted for the Lord. And I've said to you a few times that two of my friends have bought into this. And I have not wanted to mention their names, because why? But then I realized, well, wait a minute, these two guys are also teachers. And so if they buy into this, then they could start teaching it, and more people would be susceptible to it, because not everybody looks into the evidence unless they find this channel, MZTV. And I'm going to give you a whole list, and we're going to a whole list of reasons why this is a house of cards. And not only that, but people's expectations will be taken away. If this Acts 28 teaching continues, people no longer are going to believe in the snatching away. Someone recently commented in on my channel. I had a friend who believed in the snatching away, rejoiced in it, then grabbed on to this House of Cards teaching and then abandoned that expectation totally. And all they had to look forward to in this life was death, which is a great thing for Clyde Pilkington. But if you're not Clyde Pilkington, if you desire to get out of here, if you recognize that this is a wicked eon, then that's really bad news to you. So this teaching can really screw people up. And the more I talk about this, the more I realize how bad it is, the more I am really just horrified of anybody grabbing onto it. My two friends are Dean Wilkinson and Chris Carnahan, and I'm trying to talk to them. I'm sending them material, and it's just really disturbing to me that there's no critical thinking going on here. Anybody who thinks critically will look at the evidence, realize how shoddy it is, see the holes in it, and I'm gonna point out the holes repeatedly this week. I'm going to go into the BSN article, which directly refutes Paul's statement that we will not all be put to repose. I'm going to show you additional shoddy quote proof. And then by the time I'm done, if you haven't realized it already, and most of you have realized it already, that this is a junk teaching. Even though it comes across as kind and caring and loving, because who doesn't want to love their wives and love their children? But that's not the point at all. This teaching is encouraging people, promoting marriage and parenting. Not that these are bad things, but the Paul who was not promoting it in 1 Corinthians 7, and these men recognized that Paul was not promoting it in 1 Corinthians 7, they think he has changed, Paul has, over the years, and now he's promoting it as if it is, quote, front and center in anyone's spiritual life today. And it is the advanced will of the Lord to be married and have children today. The advanced will of the Lord. Anybody reading this, taking it seriously? Because isn't this the same Clyde Pilkington that teaches on the salvation of all? Yes. On the sovereignty of God? Yes. On the two evangels? Yes. But this teaching goes completely off the rails. And the same Clyde Pilkington who would criticize the King James Version because of its poor translation, 20,000 errors, the KJV being convicted of containing over 20,000 translating errors, and yet Clyde uses this version when he needs it, and its poor translations when he needs it, to further this junk teaching. And it really ticks me off. I'm going to quit apologizing for it. I am going to move on after this week, but I'm not done yet. I'm not done yet shooting this down. I feel like a gunner. This has got to be destroyed. Okay, so I appreciate, this is Martin Center, by the way. Welcome to MZTV. We expose, rebuke, and entreat here. We expose false teachings. We rebuke the teachers forwarding the false teaching, and then we entreat people to believe the truth. So I appreciate the comments many of you made that you're somehow able to love Christ appearing, to expect the snatching away, to look for Christ to return every day, and somehow you're all still able to take care of the things you need to take care of in this life. Rob Weil said, Martin, even though I'm just straining every day for the return of Christ, I still had the oil in my car changed today. Ooh, wow. According to Stephen Hill, that's like freaking impossible. So other people have said the same thing. That, yeah, I'm sorry, but we can chew gum. We can walk and chew gum at the same time. To me, it's not difficult. I mean, I can strain for Christ. I can hate this eon and still take care of the things I'm responsible for. I have to take care of. I have to take out the garbage so the house doesn't stink. I have to sweep the floor. I have to pay my bills. I have to feed Charles, take Charles for a walk. Well, I'm not going to take Charles for a walk. I don't care if he starves. What? Why? Well, because Christ might return any minute. This is absolute foolishness, and it's more junk proof, really. Let's quote Stephen Hill. Now, Clyde assumes that with this supposed epic change in eras, singleness is no longer ideal, right? And domestic life now has a paramount place in spirituality. I'm quoting from my ZWTF 4.19. I'm going to have my sister run that again underneath here. I am going to talk about the widows, which Clyde changes widows to single women. Oh, before I get into this Stephen Hill, it was Stephen Hill writing in volume 487 of Bible Students Notebook. Before I do that, there's something I did not mention yesterday that is so important that I should have mentioned in Ephesians. Remember what Clyde said? Front and center now, the thrust, the advanced will of the Lord for today is marriage and parenting and employment. But listen what Paul says in chapter 5, verse 22, he says, let the wives be subject to their own husbands as to the Lord. And in verse 28, thus the husbands ought to be loving their own wives as their own bodies. Okay? Simple exhortations to husbands and wives, so that takes care of the marriage. Marriage and parenting and employment. Oh, my. Okay, so now we get to the parenting. Chapter 6, verse 1, children, be obeying your parents in the Lord, for this is just. Honor your father and mother, which is the first precept, with a promise that it may be coming well with you. Verse 4, and fathers, see, this deals with a parenting issue. Do not be vexing your children, but be nurturing them in the discipline and admonition of the Lord. Okay, that covers marriage and parenting. Clyde's quotes, marriage, parenting, and employment. Word for word quote. Now we get to the employment part. What? Ephesians 6, verse 5. Slaves, be obeying your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling in the singleness of your heart, as to Christ, not with eye slavery as man-pleasers, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the soul with good humor, slaving as to the Lord and not to men. And then in verse 9, and masters, that is, people who own other people. People who own slaves, be doing the same toward them, being lax in threatening, being aware that their master as well as yours is in the heavens and there's no partiality with him. This is no small thing. Clyde has changed slavery to employment. But wait a minute, he's saying that here in Ephesians 5, Paul, in Ephesians 5, is forwarding the advanced will of the Lord. And I'm sorry, but there are no substitutes here. If Clyde and Stephen Hill believe that Paul is here forwarding the advanced will of the Lord for today, and I'm quoting, I put the quotes in there yesterday, watch yesterday's show, then slavery is the advanced will of the Lord. And it is now front and center, quoting again, slavery along with marriage and parenting, slavery is now front and center. You can't just change it. You can't just change slavery to employment because slavery is inconvenient for your junk truth. But that's exactly what Clyde's done here. I can't say slavery because someone will tag me on that. They'll say, wait a minute, you're saying slavery is God's advanced will for today? So he changed it to employment, thinking that no one will go to the context and check on this. This is not a small thing. This is more evidence of the poor translating principles. Indeed, the deception of this teaching. It is deception. You can't just change slavery to employment. Well, we're just going to apply it to today. There are no slaves today in our circles anyway, even though there are still slaves today. But, well, there you go. There is still slavery today. So, according to Clyde, that would be great because that's the advanced will of God, as explained to us by Paul in Ephesians chapter 5. Now, you can't just change it. But since none of us are aware of any slaves, we'll just say employment. And we'll just say that employment is the ideal. You see the subterfuge here. It's nothing less than that. And today I'm going to show you how Clyde changes the word widows to single women in order to promote this junk teaching. Now, if you are going to present to us such a wild premise as this, as Paul's giving different marriage advice in 1 Corinthians than he gives in Ephesians, and in fact, the marriage advice he's giving in 1 Corinthians 7 will result in you probably losing your wife. You remember that? Clyde said anybody who today lives his life as having a wife as not having one, 1 Corinthians 7:29, he's likely not to have a wife. Oh, so you're saying that if we follow Paul's advice in 1 Corinthians 7 that it'll tick off our wives so much because this disposition is so bad that we'll probably lose our wives. So my only conclusion is that there was a time in the history of the Ecclesia where Paul purposely gave advice that would cause men to lose their wives, purposely gave bad advice. If you're going to make such a radical statement, a radical premise, that Paul's whole marriage philosophy has changed from between 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and Ephesians, and if you're going to say now that marriage and parenting and slavery, excuse me, we have to use slavery because that's what Paul's talking about, is now front and center in the advanced will of the Lord, is slavery front and center now. It's interesting, and yet Paul says that in Christ there's neither Jew nor Greek, neither male nor female, neither slave nor free. You notice there's two things, statement from Galatians, that Clyde is promoting, not Paul. Paul's not promoting it, but Clyde is, as the advanced will of the Lord today. Marriage and slavery. And yet Paul says that in Christ there's neither male nor female. That does away with marriage. And there's neither slave nor free. That does away with slavery. So slavery and marriage are transient stations. They are passing away along with the eon, along with the era. They're passing away. There's not going to be that after we're perfected, after we're made immortal, which is great. All these things are hindrances. So why is it that Clyde would be promoting things that are going away and declaring them to be so great as to be the advanced will of the Lord today, when in fact they are passing away and they are impermanent and they are not a part of the coming eon. So if you're going to try to forward these wild premises, I'm sorry, but you need hard proof. You better be coming with some heavy-hitting verses that provably undo Paul's marriage advice in 1 Corinthians 7. In fact, not only undoes it, but makes the claim that Paul's teaching the opposite in Ephesians. And of course, cherry-picking marriage, not looking at anything else, you're going to have hard proof. Not cherry-picked passages, not bad translations from the King James Version when it suits you, not ignoring context, and not using actually mistranslations. I'm going to be giving you this list several times, but here's what Clyde has done so far that I've told you about in the last few weeks. He claims in 1 Corinthians 15:22 that Paul says, as in Adam, all die. This is him trying to promote the idea that everyone has to die. This is all related because that refers to the snatching away of 1 Thessalonians and 1 Corinthians, which is as expired, is as extinct, according to Clyde, as Paul's marriage advice. Clyde quotes, I think it's in 1 Corinthians 7, 26, the time is short. No, that's verse 29, the time is short. But no, the era is limited. What a difference. We know that short doesn't work in the only other place this word appears in the scriptures, which is in Acts, when they enshroud the body of Ananias who extorted money from the apostles. He changes the present necessity to the present distress, not following through to show that distress is unworkable in other places where this Greek word appears, especially when Paul says, explaining his mission, how he has to do it, Paul says, necessity is lying upon me. Distress doesn't work there. Neither does short work for enshroud. Number five, changing slavery to employment. And today, if I ever get to it, changing widow to single women. And of course, omitting four-fifths of the 1 Corinthians 7:29 to 30 context. Let those having wives be as though not having them. You'll never hear Clyde or Stephen Hill go past that. And yet, it's only one of five exhortations. The others being, let those who are rejoicing be as not rejoicing, those who are mourning as not mourning, those who are buying as not retaining, and those who are using the world as not using it up. The reason they don't ever quote the rest of this, they only use one-fifth of it, because all they're concerned about is marriage and patriarchy and parenting. And apparently slavery. Now we know they're promoting slavery, but they should be if they're consistent, but they're not consistent. They cherry-pick. And anyone can see that none of these things would be recommended today, as if we should all be rejoicing like the world rejoices, mourning like the rest of the world, buying and retaining everything, using the world and using it up. These men know that the rest of this passage is unworkable. That's why they never mention it, and they hope you don't go to it. But I go to it to expose it. Anyway, I was talking about Stephen Hill. Stephen Hill makes this same mistaken assumption that by looking for Christ, then we would necessarily have to ignore our family. Listen to this. This is Stephen Hill writing in volume 487 of Bible Student's Notebook. When Paul instructed married believers to live as though they were not married and unmarried believers to remain single as he was, it was because he believed that Christ would be returning very soon. Paul's advice was appropriate for the time, but 2,000 years later, after the event did not take place, that advice is no longer relevant or applicable. Do you notice? I'm going to continue that quote, but no longer relevant or applicable. Which? Well, that those having wives should be as though not having them. That's no longer relevant or applicable. What about the other four parts of that paragraph, Stephen? Let those who are rejoicing be as not rejoicing. Is that no longer applicable? We're supposed to rejoice with the rest of the world, be as crazy as they are. Those mourning as not mourning, that's no longer applicable. Now we're supposed to mourn like crazy. We're supposed to be so tightly attached to things of this earth, even our loved ones, that we mourn unreasonably with the rest of the world. Buying as not retaining, that's not applicable anymore, Stephen. So now we're supposed to hold on tightly to our possessions because Christ didn't return in the first century? And Paul would have done that? Paul would have recommended that? Paul would have recommended holding on tightly to your possessions. Well, Christ didn't come, so therefore I want you all to hold on tightly to your possessions. Using the world and not using it up. Using it up, like just engulfing it and just being ravenously using the world to get drunk on the world. Paul says, don't want you to do that. Don't act like the rest of the world. That's no longer applicable, Stephen. Why don't you guys ever mention the rest of this passage? Because it shoots down your whole premise. You only quote one out of these five admonitions from Paul. Only one out of five. Because if you quoted the other four, people would see very clearly that your premise is junk. Well, Christ hasn't come yet. We thought he would be here Tuesday. Since he's not here, the advice changes. Now we want you to just use the world up, maybe. Use it up, maybe. Take what you can get. Of course, that just destroys their entire position. Back to Stephen's quote. Paul's advice was appropriate for the time, but 2,000 years later, after the event did not take place, that advice is no longer relevant or applicable. This is why in Ephesians 5, Paul gave very different advice to husbands and wives. Different advice? He says, husbands, love your wives, and wives, be subject to your husbands. How is that any different than what he said in 1 Corinthians 15, or 1 Corinthians chapter 1? He said, or 1 Corinthians chapter 7, he said, let those having wives be as not having them. He didn't say to not have them. He didn't say to put them away. Be as not having them. In other words, it's so simple to see Paul's meaning. And I've said this over and over again. It's not that you're supposed to put away your wife. Be as not having one. That is, just hold them loosely. I'm not tired of saying it. It's got to be said. Paul did not give very different advice to husbands and wives. Rather than live as though they were single, he urged them to live in love with their focus on family or one another. This is also why Paul instructed Timothy that those seeking eldership in the ecclesia must first demonstrate their leadership abilities as a husband and father. I'm going to get to that later. But you see how Stephen creates this false dichotomy by pitting be as not having wives against, quote, live in love with their focus firmly on one another, as though these were mutually exclusive concepts. In doing this, he and Clyde both completely miss Paul's point. And as I shared with you before, I'm the father of three sons, and I love them dearly, and even when I was raising them, I held them loosely. I realized that ultimately they belonged to God and not me, and even though I enjoyed them, I did not make them the primary source of my happiness. That was Christ. And as a test, I would always ask myself, would I want the Lord to delay? I used to ask myself this, would I want the Lord to delay his coming just so I can watch my boys grow up? Yeah, that was always a sobering question. It's a question that you should always ask yourself concerning your worldly wants and desires and your possessions. We all have worldly wants and desires and possessions. But if we were ever to desire Christ to delay his appearing, which these guys are doing, they want him to delay his appearing. If ever we should want that, because of a worldly want or possession, human or otherwise, I suggest that the reason that would happen is because that worldly want or possession has, to quote A. Enoch again, quote, taken an undue hold upon our hearts. That's Paul's whole point in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Don't let these things take an undue hold upon your heart. Notice the qualifying state word there, undue. That is an extreme hold upon your heart. Of course they have a hold upon your heart. Of course, even your possessions have a hold upon your heart. Your album collection, your baseball card collection, your dog, your wife, they have a hold upon your heart. They all do. The point is an undue hold. That is an extra excessive hold like the rest of the world has. So that when they lose something or someone, they mourn inconsolably because they do not have an expectation. So simple. These men just blow the whole thing up and purposely don't understand it, I think. I mean, they have to force themselves to not understand this because it's so easy. And by the way, marriage front and center. How is it front and center if Paul doesn't get to it till chapter 5 and 6 of Ephesians? If marriage and employment and slavery, tell it like it is, guys. Paul is promoting slavery as an ideal, as the advanced will of God, okay? You can't just willy-nilly change slavery to employment. How dare you, really? It's a good thing this isn't the book of the unveiling, where if you add or subtract from the word, then the calamities of that book will come upon you. You guys are changing a word completely. Throwing rogue translations in there from the King James Version. When you know that this version contains over 20,000 translating errors. And you know this version teaches eternal torment. Shame on you guys. Really. I hope every single person sees this teaching exposed. And you guys are going to have to recant it. But I'm not under any delusions or illusions that that will happen, because I wrote all this stuff down back in 2015. And I don't know if anybody ever sent it to Clyde, but I've never heard a word about it. So I'm not expecting anything. But yeah, marriage and parenting is front and center. That's strange. If it was front and center, it should be in chapter 1 of Ephesians. No, but I read to you what was in chapter 1 of Ephesians yesterday. I read that to you. Front and center is to know the will of God, to understand his will for our lives, to understand the purpose of the eons, all those wonderful things from Ephesians chapter 1. Read Ephesians chapter 1 on your own. Open your scriptures. Open your concordant literal New Testament. Read Ephesians chapter 1. That's front and center, because it's chapter freaking 1. That's front and center. How can you even claim that marriage and parenting is now front and center when Paul doesn't get to it till chapter 5 and 6? Front and center, advanced will. Again, just because you guys are patriarchs, don't drag the rest of us into it. Enjoy it for yourself. Quit building a false teaching in order to seduce other people into your passion. I just can't believe how this time goes on. I know I keep repeating some themes, but I'm not going to apologize for it. I need to drill this into people's heads. If somebody's watching this video today who's heard of this teaching that they really should be married with children in order to be living the advanced will of God for their lives, they're going to get into situations that they shouldn't be in. And I am telling young people today that it is ideal for you to remain as Paul was. If you are called being a single person, stay single. If you receive this call, if you grasp this gospel while being married, then stay married. Don't get unmarried, even if your wife or husband is an unbeliever. Because you don't know whether you might be able to change them by your behavior, not by preaching to them constantly, but by your behavior, by being loving, by being gracious, by being patient. And no, your spouse or husband is not a member of the body of Christ simply because they married you. That's another insane teaching from Clyde Pilkington and Stephen Hill. That's another junk theory. yeah, these things just keep coming. I don't know. Doesn't look like I'm going to get to my whole purpose for making this video was to get to the widows. If it was up to me, I would make an hour video. But I know that when people look and see 1 hour, that they'd be hesitant to even start it, to even watch it. It's bad enough when one of my shows goes over 30 minutes, especially for Colin Moore. Yeah, takes a look at it and says, Xander, why can't you make a shorter video? And like I said yesterday, I wish I could. So I'll show you crime number 17 tomorrow, changing Paul's word widow into single women on interpretive crime. I don't know. Again, I don't know. This one might be purposeful. It looks purposeful to me. How can you miss this? But I'm just not sure it is, because Clyde is not one to like think, okay, I'm going to deceive people in order to forward my passion, in order to get people to do what I do. I don't see him doing that. He's a good man. I just think he's so careless. And he's got this univision of this world of patriarchy that he can't see outside of it. I don't think he can even see the rest of the world outside of it, because he wants the eon to continue. It's not purposeful. I really can't bring myself to say that. It's naive and it's bubble vision. It's careless. And really, I'm a little insulted by it, because the evidence is so bad. I don't know how Clyde thinks he's going to pass it on. I don't know how he thinks people are going to grab onto it, because most of us in the body of Christ are students, and we're going to go check up on this stuff, right? Like I did. I said, this sounds weird. I'm going to check up on it. Boom. I found all the holes in it. It's like Swiss cheese. Boom, 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 boom. Jesus. And then I hear that my friends, Chris Carnahan and Dean Wilkinson, are into this. They're both into the we're all going to die doctrine. Yeah, they are. They're into the we're all going to die. I don't know. It's disturbing, man, because these guys are teachers. You start teaching this stuff, and how can anybody believe anything else you say? Is this stuff so bad? You know, I don't enjoy this. I'm mourning about it, you know? I'm not perfect. Do I have all the right beliefs? I think I do. If somebody can show me 15 holes in something I believe, then I'll sure as hell rethink it. If it's just a matter of some slight difference of opinion, then, you know, that's a little harder to change. But if somebody points out to you all these bogus so-called proofs, and then shows you the trickery, the subterfuge, the bad translations, the changing of words, how can anybody continue to teach it unless they don't look at the evidence? We don't want the evidence. Nope, we like this truth, we like it, and we like it, and we're not going to look at your evidence. That's what I think is happening. We're not going to look at your evidence. I don't know, maybe not. I'm going to give my friends the benefit of the doubt, because they're my friends. And God used me to bring a lot of these truths to these gentlemen. So, I mean, I have a vested interest in their lives and their walks. I've lost many people. Many people have gone off, so, I mean, I'm not going to mourn like the rest of the world mourns. I'm going to mourn, but I won't mourn as the rest of the world mourns. I'm going to follow Paul's advice in 1 Corinthians 7, in other words. I follow his advice. I can't even imagine a world in which that advice no longer applies today. Use the world, use it up, buy things, hold on to them tightly. Make your wife or your husband your everything. If you do that, yes, if you think that's obsolete, and if you go to the rest of those points in 1 Corinthians 7, 29 through 30, and you say, okay, that's obsolete too, that's obsolete too, that's obsolete too, then I guess you would think Paul's saying, I'm just supposed to throw myself into the world now, give myself 100%, to Walmart, to my car, to my family. That's where these people are. That's where they are. And Acts 28 encourages it. The Acts 28 thing, I can't figure it. It's all related. You see, it's all related. Like I said yesterday, I don't know which came first. Acts 28, we're all going to die, or this family situation in 1 Corinthians 7, making this false distinction between that and Ephesians. I have a feeling, this is just me, I have a feeling, this is an educated guess, also known as an hypothesis, that the family issues came first with Charles Welch, with Clyde, with Stephen Hill, and anybody else who buys into this. It's a soulish, emotional attachment to earth and family. Because the Acts 28 position is so bad, the evidence is such a joke, that it can't stand by itself. It can't stand by itself. The only reason anybody could put over the Acts 28:28 BS is if they're playing upon an emotional core. They're tapping into they're really taking advantage of people's emotional weaknesses for family and for the earth. Yes. They're preying upon that weakness. Maybe not even intentionally. But this Otis Sellers theory of the premillennial kingdom and Charles Welch theory, ignore Paul's early letters, which conveniently gets rid of the snatching away, and the we shall not all be put to repose. This is a deceitful preying upon people's emotional vulnerabilities. They're taking advantage of people's emotional vulnerabilities. And again, that's the only way you could buy in to these junk theories is if you're predisposed to wanting them to be true. Just like eternal torment. Just like eternal torment and free will. You're predisposed to wanting eternal torment to be true. You're predisposed to wanting to have a free will. So that when people show you so-called evidence, which is terrible, which is not evidence at all, you'll tend to buy into it because of this emotional predisposition. Same thing is happening here. This is emotional predisposition. For home and hearth and earth that will make a person grasp at straws, grasp at anything to keep these precious commodities intact as we know them.